arm. So Hamilton 12 is 1/4 the power, 60 me weaker. 60 me weaker than minus 107 is minus 113. So half a microvolt, minus 113. Not many signal generators go much lower than that, because the leakage of the cabinet starts getting louder than the signal coming out of the coax connector when you go that low on the amplitude dial of the signal generator. Almost every HF receiver will pass that test. And when you put in that number of microvolts with a standard bandwidth of the IF strip, maybe it's a 2.1 KC crystal filter, so to speak, and do you get a 10 or a 20 decibel signal-to-noise ratio of the audio that comes back out? That's one way of rating it. Well, because on HF frequencies, an antenna looking at the horizon on HF is seeing so darn much ionospheric noise. You've got 30,000 thunderstorms going on simultaneously around the world. They and a whole bunch of other cosmic noises makes a lot of noise in the receiver. You'll discover that you connect a good antenna to a good HF receiver. On a not-so-great day, the S-meter will read S5 of noise coming in to the antenna. And is it really coming in the antenna? You can find out real fast. Open up the coax cable on the back of the receiver, and the S-meter jumps down to S0, and with the antenna connected, it's S5, and it's not because somebody's running a spark gap transmitter next door to you. That's just broadband noise on, we'll say, the 40 or the 80 meter band. In that circumstance, the noise coming in from Mother Nature is so strong that if the receiver sensitivity was 20 decibels weaker than I just gave you as a criteria, if it was that much worse, it wouldn't matter. And here's the proof. On a good day, you connect a good antenna to your HF receiver, and you're listening to somebody, he's giving you a 10 dB over S9 signal. You disconnect the antenna, plug in a random length of wire to the semiconductor of the receiver, just a clip lead laying on the table in the shack, and the guy coming out, the signal coming out of the loudspeaker of that particular guy sounds almost the same, even though the S-meter reads S2 or S1. What's happened is you plugged in an antenna that has 10 dB less gain. You got 10 dB less signal, but because you've lowered the noise that's already huge by 10 dB, you've lowered the signal that was reasonable by 10 dB, the ratio didn't change, so in many circumstances that clip lead for that particular reception is good enough. Don't try to transmit into that clip lead at the 10 dB down antenna. That guy ain't going to hear you. But on a receiver, that can work like a charm. So sensitivity on HF, except for some very rare periods, like when you're trying to do a ground wave propagation of 10 meters to your buddy, and the band is closed, and the band is super quiet, there the ultimate sensitivity will matter. And even if the receiver was insensitive, you could go to Advanced Receiver Research, among many other brand names, buy a preamplifier, put the preamplifier in front of the receiver, or into the receiver lead inside the box. Make sure it's not transmitting through it, but you put a preamplifier on there, and now you've got whatever sensitivity you want. And the preamplifier has got a switch. You can bypass it when you're transmitting. You've got to be careful now. You don't want to put more than 30 watts through the little bitty relay that's in that preamp. So there's solutions to all these problems. On HF, it's hard to get a receiver that ain't sensitive enough. That's what the bottom line of all that is. Now you go to VHF, and it's a different ball game. 2 meters and 432, for instance. You're on 2 meters right now. And every single rice box you and I can buy, in other words, something made in Southeast Asia, sometimes called rice box, a little bit unfair slang, but you know what it means. No derogatory comment intended here. The most VHF rigs, they don't rate the sensitivity in microvolts or in dBm. They're rated in noise figure for a couple of very good reasons. Unfortunately, most Southeast Asia barefoot rigs start off with around a 12 decibel noise figure. If you can get it, you'd love to have a noise figure of 1/2 dB on 2 meters. Now you've got a state-of-the-art rig. Noise figure, the lower, the better. The reason noise figure came along is because around 1945, somebody had a receiver that he claimed had 1 microvolt sensitivity. The next brand name in the competition said, I've got a 0.5 microvolt sensitivity. And brand name C came along and said, I've got 0.25 microvolt sensitivity. So all of a sudden the numbers got better and better, and somebody realized these guys were cheating. They were using a more and more narrow IF strip. And when you make the IF strip more narrow, you let through less noise, and yes, the receiver, if it's got enough gain, will listen to a weaker signal and still give a good signal-to-noise ratio. But pretty soon you get to the point where the receiver is so narrow, like a 500 hertz filter, where you could listen to single side, you could listen to Morse code with it, but speech coming through there will sound like it's coming through a bale of cotton. So although the sensitivity was great, it wasn't usable. It's just a specmanship. So to get around this, they invented something called noise figure. You could say noise figure is a sensitivity test once you have standardized the bandwidth of the IF strip of the receiver. I'm using a couple of simplifications here, but that's one way of describing what noise figure is. You've now created a level playing field, and you've really measured the quality of the front end. So the reason why most Southeast Asia-made rigs have such a high noise figure, the reason they left out that preamplifier is because strong signal overload on VHF is very important in Southeast Asia because the hams are so packed in tight. So strong signal characteristics are more important than ultimate sensitivity. Over here in the United States, we're much more spread out, and ultimate sensitivity, particularly if you're a moon bouncer, becomes very important. Again, you slap on a good preamplifier, and that problem goes away. So there is a difference in what you're really looking for in HF versus VHF. A really Cadillac VHF rig, UHF rig, would have a very low number for noise figure. Almost all of them do not, but the simple solution is you add the preamp. I know the first time you hear all this, it's not going to make complete sense, but eventually will after you hear it a couple of times, Cash. N2KDN, KQIW, and TechNet.
N2EL, Jake Lemon.
Both are Rich and Mel in that order, but Cash first. Let's see what he'd like to have amplified first. You got it, Cash.
Okay, thank you, Dick. I appreciate it. It's clearing up a lot, actually. I am gearing this more towards HF right now. And what I'm trying to do is swim through the muck and mire. I'm not actually shopping, actively shopping, but I am starting to learn and compare about what the different numbers I'm reading in the books, the magazine articles, and the reviews and stuff are meaning. And you've actually helped clear it up quite a bit for me, and I appreciate it. And not to mention, in fact, studying for my extra, I don't know if that's adding to this. It's probably adding to my confusion more than anything else. But you guys here help clear it up. I appreciate it very much. And KDM, back to you, Dick.
Okay, Rich, N2EO, go ahead with your comments.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, I keep waiting for the beep. I forget there's no beep during that time. Okay, I wanted to give you, I pulled out the manual on my Tentec Jupiter, which is not a high-priced Tentec. In fact, it's one of their lower-priced radios. And spurious frequency dynamic range, 90 dB is 3 kHz bandwidth, is 50 kHz tone spacing. Third-order intercept point, plus 10 dBm. Noise floor, minus 126 dBm at 3 kHz bandwidth. S meter calibrated, S9 to 50 microvolts. Thank you, Dick.
Now, I may not have remembered all those numbers, but let's put some little bit of meaning into at least one of them. With a 3 kHz bandwidth, which is a nice filter for listening to single sideband, you'll get pretty good hi-fi audio out of a 3 kHz single sideband filter. If you had a noise floor of minus 124 dBm, that means a signal with a signal strength of minus 124 dBm would be equal to the noise. You'd have essentially 0 dB signal-to-noise ratio. Let me drop a second. And because of the way the human hearing works, a really clean single sideband signal at 0 dB signal to noise ratio, you would get some audio out of it, and maybe you'd get 75% copy. Increase the signal from minus 24 to minus 14, 10 dB stronger, you'd have 10 dB of signal to noise ratio, and to the average ham radio operator on, say, 20 meters, that would be almost a hi-fi signal. It's really not hi-fi, but you'd have 99% copy of the audio. You'd hear a little bit of noise in the background, but it would sound very good to you. So knowing where the noise floor is allows you to easily calculate for various signal strengths what's the signal-to-noise ratio likely to be. Other than that, what some people will do is say this receiver has a sensitivity of minus 14, and their definition of sensitivity is what signal strength gives you a 10 dB signal-to-noise ratio coming to the loudspeaker. Mel, M2KEY, go right ahead with your comment.
Okay, I couldn't get to the phone, I couldn't get from the phone to the radio quick enough. You asked about that aftermarket gadget to add on to a receiver, which a company in the UK makes several versions of it. It's, it was Mutech, but now it's under Bob Platt, I believe, Electronic. I know it's called that. It's G8OZP, Joseph Peter, over in Stratfordshire. If you want to get any of those contraptions, go to G8OZP, and you'll get all the information on the email and the whole business if you want to get in contact with a stick over.
Yeah, as you can tell, what both Rich and Mel and I do, if we were rich people, we'd write up a great big check. We would buy paddled Cadillac and Rolls-Royce rig, as long as they're well-designed, good brand name, the problem would go away. We would have all of the performance out of our rig. Well, the three of us are not rich people. You may think we are, but we're not. We're sort of paupers. As such, I, for one, and Mel quite often, probably Rich, too. No, Rich buys a few more new rigs than I do, but the most of us, every piece of electronics I own is used, usually bought on the flea market, bought at a flea market. And as such, I'm the guy who will occasionally buy a rig at a flea market that looks ugly because it's got a dented front panel. There's a little bit of a cough going on here, as you can tell. And my attitude is that on most of the rigs we buy, when you buy the thing on a flea market, even if it's a little bit of a lemon, 90% or 99% of what you want is inside that rig. Nowadays, except for in a very exotic integrated circuit chip or a microprocessor, no one component costs very much. So with a little bit of troubleshooting, with the help of Andy, the ATCDL, we eventually find the defective component in the rig and replace that component. So with the right attitude, with the ability to do repairs, there's almost nothing called bad rig or lemon rig. You can make any one of these things work. And the most expensive component in the rig you're now listening to is the power transformer. And it's a rather high reliability component. You'd have to shoot it with a .22 rifle in order to really damage that transformer under normal circumstances. Other than that, the most expensive thing is probably the liquid crystal display or whatever it is. not liquid crystal, some kind of illuminator. And after that, the next most expensive thing is probably the S-meter or the big knob on the front panel. I can afford to replace each one of those things. I'll admit that getting caught out of Kenwood is a little bit difficult. If it was an ICOM rig and you call up the repair department at Belleville, Washington, and you tell them what part you need for a 15-year-old rig, they mail the part to you and then bill you. Because their experience with ham radio operators that talk to each other is that you keep them happy and they will keep coming back buying your rig. And most hams will not stick the company. They'll really pay for it. So getting the part that's defective and replacing it as long as you've got a little bit of the right attitude, not a bit of a problem. So I buy used equipment all the time, and sometimes beat up used equipment and fix it. And on a number of occasions, I'll buy a piece of equipment where the owner says it ain't working. And you bring it home, and you find out one little wire going to the output coax connector has vibrated away and is making poor contact, or a fuse is blown. You'd be amazed how many times a non-working rig has something extremely minor for the repair. So, to me, that's the solution. There are other people who, when they buy a used piece of equipment, they won't buy it unless it's perfectly shiny, brand new, not a single scratch on it, guaranteed never to be owned by a smoker, in the original box, with the original packing material, with the original owner's manual and service manual. There are people who won't buy a used rig unless it has all of that, with a signed guarantee in blood by the owner that you can bring it back if it's not perfect. And you can do that 2 weeks later. I mean, with those kind of restrictions, you're not going to buy very many rigs. And you don't need all that, in my opinion. But to each his own. Each of us has our own way, the way we do ham radio. I don't put as much money into it. I enjoy the repair process and the troubleshooting process. And to me, rarely does a rig have an expensive component inside. And therefore, replacing the component that's bad is not so bad. The worry about receivers, as long as you're buying a known good brand, and the best way to buy a good receiver these days is not to buy serial number one of the brand new one that's got all the horns and whistles. Again, this is an opinion. But the brand new rig, serial number one, sometimes it's got bugs in it. You check with your buddies and find out that that 8-year-old rig that's been around and they've sold 180,000 of them and it's in the third production run and everybody loves it. The only complaint they've got is it's only got 30 memories and you wish it had 50 memories. And there's ways you can live with that. But you buy a known big three, Kenwood, Icom, Yaesu, and a few other brands, and Tentec. You buy a known good brand, a known model number that's got a good track record and a lot of history, and a lot of people love it. You can't go wrong. That's an opinion. Back to you, Cash, and to KDN, K2RAW on the tech end.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dick. Actually, let me check. I switched over to my radio down in the house, and it's kind of a makeshift setup. You still hearing me okay?
We're hearing you fine. Go right ahead, Cash.
Okay, good. Yes, that was it. I really appreciate all the help. I know I had a second question, unrelated, that escapes me right now. Maybe I have early old-timer sitting. But if I think of it later, I'll come back on and ask. But I appreciate the help. And to KDM.
WHYY.
Joe, go right ahead to WHYY. And give us a little bit more volume, Joe.
I don't really have any more volume on this radio. This is what you see is what you get on this thing. Basically, the Motorola HD. I have a question for you. This is sort of related to a equipment that operates on 220, friend of mine's repeater. Basically, the type of problem that it experiences receiver by itself, repeater receiver, is say has a figure of say 0.2, 0.25 or 20. Alright, so it looks like it works normal as far as manufacturer specs are concerned. It used to work with a preamp a long time ago. Something happened to this particular repeater, now it will not work correctly with preamp. The preamp itself has, say, a gain of 15 or 16 dB. I don't know if that's actually really correct or not. And the preamp itself is measured with a spectrum analyzer putting a signal in. It does show you a definite gain throughout the entire 20 band. When you take the preamp for a head on a member, the ultimate receiver sensitivity is now worse than what it was before. It's less instead of more. Any ideas?
Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Yes, I do have ideas. And I'm going to answer your question right after we pick up the other Joe, who did ask a question just before you, Mr. RYY. So we're going to take things in order. Then I'm going to come right back to you because you're number two on the runway right now. KC2, QYW. Sorry, I said some of the things I did there earlier, Joe. Go right ahead with your question. KQRIW.
Okay, true, Dick. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you, Dick. Yeah, this is Joe. KD2QYW. It's a quick question. I'm a new technician, and in the future, I want to pick up an HF. I don't know, you know, maybe go with the Kenwood, or maybe go with one of those IC756 Pro Drift. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, I hope that Eric recognized. I hope that Mel is familiar with those rigs. Mel, you got an opinion on those two rigs that Joe just asked about, K2KEY?
This is K2KEY. Yeah, they're both very fine pieces of equipment. The ICOM, I'm familiar with the ICOM piece, the 756 Pro 3. I've used that radio, and it seems to be an excellent radio. These are the high end of ICOM, not the highest end now, of course. They did come out with radios that are much higher now in price. Whether or not, again, it's what your pocketbook can afford. You want to go to their ultimate, their new one, the ICOM 7800, which has a tremendous high price tag on it, almost the price of an automobile, of a compact car. And it's for the man who, has everything. But with a Pro Series 756 Pro 3, I think would suffice anything that you can imagine right now for HF operations, Dick, over.
Very fine. Joe, I wonder if that's what you're looking for. KC2QYW, KQIW. My name is Dick.
Yeah, okay, Dick. Yeah, thank you. And this is Joe, KC2QYW. Yeah, thank you.
Alrighty. Now, Joe, W-A-Q-R-Y-Y. The preamp situation. When you have a preamp on a repeater, you're in an extremely vulnerable situation. A repeater that was properly designed, going into a duplexing filter, where you're transmitting and receiving out of the same antenna, you'd like to have something in the vicinity of 140 decibels of isolation between the transmit frequency and the receive frequency, so as not to overload the receiver with transmitter energy or sideband of the transmitter, desensitizing the receiver. So that duplexing filter requires extremely careful tuning. Under normal circumstances, a well-installed Type M connector on a piece of RG8 or RG214 coax cable can give you something in the vicinity of 110, 120 dB of shielding. And you'd like it to be 140. So, shielding between transmitter circuitry, including the power supply wiring, and receiver circuitry, and receiver wiring, and the quality of the coax cable, the alignment of the duplexing filter, all of this is very critical if you want a well-operating repeater that doesn't have all kinds of intermod performance because of receiver overload. When you're testing the barefoot receiver with the transmitter turned off, you'll measure one sensitivity with the preamp not present. If the preamp really is lowering the noise figure, and that is, if the preamp has, in the world's best situation, a half dB noise figure, and the barefoot receiver without the preamp had a noise figure of 5 dB, you're going to be getting something in the vicinity of 6 dB of improvement when you add the preamplifier. And yes, those numbers don't add up linearly. There's an explanation for that, but we'll get to that in a second. So adding the preamp to a good receiver when the transmit is not turned on, if the preamp really has the noise figure it's supposed to have, and if the barefoot receiver has the noise figure that's not so great, it's got to make an improvement if the preamp isn't breaking into oscillation at some other frequency. When you turn on the transmitter, when the preamp is present, all hell breaks loose. Because the preamplifier you can buy, if it doesn't have a $60 filter con on it, In other words, the D plus wiring going into the package of the preamp needs a filter with 100 and some odd dB of shielding. You don't just bring the wire through a hole in the wall or through a simple 1,000 picofarad bypass capacitor and an RF choke on the inside. And that's going to give you 60 dB of shielding, but you need 100. The preamplifier that almost all of us put onto a repeater is nowhere near as well shielded as it should be. So now with the preamp, you've got a sneak RF path from the transmitter through the wiring of the preamp into the receiver and capable of overloading the whole thing. So there's lots of situations where you've got a good operating repeater without the preamp. You'd like it to be an excellent operating repeater. You'd like to bring it down to 0.15 microvolts of sensitivity with the transmitter turned on. And you measure receiver sensitivity, transmitter on, transmitter off, and you get two entirely different numbers where the sensitivity goes away by a whole lot of dB when the transmitter is turned on. That's due to shielding. In some cases, you can relay out the wiring of the B-plus to the preamp. You can put the preamp in another place. You can build a box around the preamp. Like, for instance, Advanced Receiver Research makes an excellent preamp. If you're a moon bouncer and you hang that preamp on your antenna, when your antenna is aimed at the moon, it does a fantastic job. You look at the way that box is made. It's got a nice outer perimeter of aluminum. It's got a simple upper cover and a lower cover with no gasketing, with no screws around the cover. There's just four screws in the center to hold the upper cover down to the lower cover, and sometimes there's paint in between the two. That is absolutely positively not an EMI shield for that preamp. A smart person will look at that with his RFI, R-F-E-Y-E, and say, I'd better build a real box around that thing, or it ain't going to survive in a repeater operation. So this is some of what goes on some of the time. Wonder if that helps a little bit, Joe. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-2-I-W in the TechNet.
Comment.
W-2-S-C-W. We'll get to you in a second. After that, we're also going to listen to Eric's comment on quite a few things here. But, Joe, back to you for what you've heard so far.
Well, I didn't specify that the repeater was on. I was mentioning this by...
I'm hearing you beautifully on the input, Joe, so don't worry about that. So, the transmitter was not turned on when you were telling me about all of this operation. If the preamp really has 15 to 16 dB of gain, like you said, if the preamp really has a quarter of a dB noise figure or something like that, and if the receiver by itself had a noise figure that's significantly higher, and assuming the preamp really has 50 ohm input, 50 ohm output properly connected, under those circumstances, adding the preamp absolutely positively must improve receiver sensitivity. If the receiver sensitivity didn't improve, you've either got a damaged preamp. And by the way, I've seen the situation where you measure the preamp on an automatic noise figure indicator at a VHF convention, and you get a real nice number. You measure the gain at the convention, you get a real nice number. You take the preamp home, and you didn't know it, but some electrostatic discharge occurred, and you've got a partially damaged low-noise transistor in there. And by some magic, it still gives you 15 dB of gain, but now its noise figure is 2.5 dB. I've seen that happen. Or it's a latent, because of electrostatic discharge that occurred a week ago, and the latent failure decided to strike you now. So does the preamp really have the good noise figure today, is a question. If the preamp matches the noise figure today, and by the way, when you're measuring the noise figure of the preamp on an automatic noise figure indicator, by definition, if that instrumentation is working correctly, it is presenting a 50 ohm impedance, DC the light on the input of the preamp, and 50 ohms DC the light on the output of the preamp. Therefore, a questionable stability preamp could be perfectly stable during the time it's on the automatic noise figure indicator. Plug it into your real receiver, where the output of the preamp looks into a bandpass filter on the front end of your receiver of your repeater, and the world really changes. Because the way a filter works is that it passes certain frequencies, that's the good news. the frequencies it's rejecting, it's presenting a dead short circuit on those frequencies. Depending on the line length between the preamp and that filter, your preamp could be breaking into an oscillation. And when it breaks into an oscillation, you get all kinds of funny news. And until you put a directional coupler in there into a spectrum analyzer, you may not know it's breaking into an oscillation. The first thing I would try in your case is I would change the length of cable from the output of the preamp to the input of the receiver. If it is oscillating, it may stop oscillating when you change the length of that cable. At certain phase angles, it doesn't like seeing the short circuit at certain frequencies that that input bandpass filter is presenting to the output of the preamp. So that's one of the first experiments I tried. The second experiment I would try is I would put a 2 dB pad between the preamp and the receiver. Again, an unstable preamp will become stable when it starts looking into a pad. And so with the 2 dB pad, you think you had 16 dB of gain with the preamp, and now you've got 14 dB of gain, but it's stable and doesn't oscillate. And now measure the sensitivity again. So after you change the line length or add a 2 dB pad and you recheck sensitivity with the transmitter turned off, I'd like to think you're going to get a pleasant surprise. If not, you've got quite a mystery there, Joe. W-E-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W, and the tech then.
All right, the sensitivity was checked with either two or three different preamps, all the same, the Air-Quadar preamps. I believe they are probably 20 dB gain, up to 20, so I think they're about 16 on switch, I think they're about 20. They ran up to 20 on 220 bands. Three different preamps tried, at least two or three of them, I believe. They were also tried looking into a 3 dB pad. It does not make a difference. The only thing 3 dB pad does is also make the sensitivity. With the sensitivity with the preamp connected in the circuit, just coming off the generator itself, the signal generator, the sensitivity is about 3 to 4 dB worse than the stock preamp than without the preamp by itself. So it seems like something in the receiver does not like to have the preamp put on it. The same receiver used to work with the preamp at a time, quite a time before, and something, I think, happened inside the receiver. So I can't put a finger on what happened there inside the receiver. It would indicate exactly what part is there. This type of repeater has construction where I believe it has the RF amplifier and the mixer. Because there is something in the circuit that has the RF amplifier internally, and there is also some stuff in the mixer. So, which two of those parts is not working completely correct, I don't know, because stock-wise, with the receiver, seems like it's working correctly, but with the preamp, it doesn't want to work correctly. The preamp actually hurts and helps it.
What brand of signal generator were you using, Joe? Question number one. And question number two, approximately what minus dBm or microvolts of sensitivity were you measuring? Back to you, Joe.
I was being tested with an IFR 1500. The output attenuator was set to about 0.2, or actually I think it's around minus 122. Somewhere around that level, right, like about there. And the sensitivity went to about somewhere around like 0.35 or 20, something like that, with the preamp connected. It was about at least somewhere around approaching 0.2 or 0.25 with the preamp out of the circuit. So with the preamp in, it reduced the sensitivity by about at least 4 or 5 dB.
Okay. You'll notice that Joe quite often said 0.2 for 20 and 0.35 for 20. That's slang among communication people, meaning that's where he got 20 decibels of noise quieted. Or sometimes people will say 0.2 for 12. That means 12 dB of synas, signal plus noise to noise ratio. Okay, two of the criteria for measuring sensitivity. 20 dB of quieting is the old one. That's the one that's easiest to do. The good news about using an IFR 1500 is I have a lot more faith when you tell me it's 0.2 or 0.35 microvolts, minus 122 dBm. What happens quite often is a person will take something like a Agilent Hewlett-Packard signal generator where the dial does not go anywhere near down that low. They'll put a pad after it in order to bring the signal that low and forget about the fact that this leakage from the cabinet is almost an equal power signal. So what you've got to do is wave your hand over the preamplifier, and you watch the sensitivity going up and down, or the signal level going up and down, because there's more than one path. One path is through the coax cable, the other is through the shielding of the cabinet, through the B-plus wiring, and so on. With your IFR-1500, hopefully, it's a well-shielded cabinet, properly installed, and you aren't running into that problem. You've got a bit of a mystery there. And I think you started saying that when you added the 3dB pad, you lost a couple of dB of sensitivity. That's almost impossible. In other words, if you've got 15, 16 dB of gain in the preamp, and you add a 3dB pad after the preamp, the sensitivity should go down by a quarter of a dB, half a dB, but not almost three. Run that by again, Joe. If I heard you correctly, that again sounds strange. To be K2RYY, K2RIW on the TechNet.
I'm trying to do this by memory, because I did this actually about 7 or 8 months ago. The preamp with the pad after it seems to reduce the sensitivity back to the point where I think it approached almost like about 0.5 or something like that. Why is somebody ringing my phone here? Stay by.
Okay, while we're standing by and waiting for Joe, I know that SCW and EJ came first. KE2EJ, Eric, sorry to keep you waiting. I know you wanted to make comments on all of the above, so go ahead, right ahead, Eric.
No, I wasn't really comments, more of a question. K2RIW, KE2EJ. I picked up a weather satellite here, 136 megahertz, and it had a fried front end, and I couldn't find the transistors that went with it. I had a handful of high electron mobility transistors and decided to build a little circuit and put it at the front end, and it gives me about 22 dB of gain, and I can't measure the noise because I know it's darn quiet. This should be something like about 0.25, 0.3 to dB, somewhere in that range. But my question is, I know I should know the answer to this, but I just want to get your thoughts. First of all, the F-transistor is really designed to operate at a higher frequency, but it works fine at that frequency. What I'm beginning to find is because there's more gain there now than there used to be in the original receiver design. And what I'm suspecting is that the first mixer's intercept point has gotten a lot worse than what it really ought to be. Any thoughts, Dick?
Okay. Two thoughts. Number one, high electron mobility transistors, quite a few of them are good to 20 gigahertz of gain. And when you've got a transistor that's capable of giving you lots of gain and good noise figure at 20 gigahertz, and you're using it way down at 136 megs, which is an IF frequency as far as that transistor is concerned. You've got to be very careful about putting beads and resistors and whatever in the right places to make sure it's not breaking into oscillation at 5 gigs at the exact same time that you're using it at 136 megs. And if that transistor is giving that poor mixer of yours a 5 gig oscillation at the same time that it's preamplifying 136, megacycles, that can do some terrible things to the intercept point of the mixer. That being said, whenever you add a preamp in front of any receiver, you get good news and bad news. The good news, and the whole reason you added the preamp, is that hopefully it has a noise figure significantly lower than the noise figure of the barefoot receiver. You end up with a more sensitive receiver, can listen to weaker signals. Particularly if the preamp has got enough gain to override the noise figure. In other words, if I bought a barefoot Southeast Asia made rig with a 12 dB noise figure, and I put a 20 dB gain preamp in front of it with a half dB noise figure, that overall combination probably has something like 1.25 dB noise figure. We can work out the mathematics of the cascaded noise figure formula. So the preamp makes a huge improvement in sensitivity of a barefoot Southeast Asia made rig. That's the good news. you put 20 dB of gain in front of any receiver, the point of overload just degraded by 20 dB. There's a certain signal level in which the receiver goes bonkers. With the preamp present, you're going to hit that power level into the receiver 20 decibels sooner. Therefore, depending on what environment you're in, the most ideal situation is where you've got a bypass relay, a so-called transfer switch, transfer relay, where when you're in a strong signal requirement, you say, I don't need the ultimate sensitivity, but I can't tolerate all this DON overload, so you throw the transfer relay to bypass the preamp. When you're in a quiet environment and there's nothing but weak signals around, you turn on the preamp. Now, is there a way you can get a preamp in there where you get the best possible sensitivity without hurting intercept point and overload characteristics? No. Everybody's dreaming for that. It's the equivalent of asking for an Einstein brain inside of a Red Hill Welch body. You don't get that combination. Southeast Asia leaves out the preamp and 95% of the rigs we buy. They are all gain starved because overload characteristics in Southeast Asia are a hell of a lot more important than ultimate sensitivity. We come out, many of those rigs go into the United States and they go into the places like Montana and Utah and Arizona, wide open spaces, boondock radio-wise, nobody else around with strong signals. And everybody you listen is going to be two states away and they're weak. You want the ultimate sensitivity and you put on a preamp. But you can't have it both ways. You pay the money and you text your choice when it comes to that preamp. It's, in general, always going to hurt overload and intercept point characteristics. KE2EJ, I wonder if some of that makes, I know it makes sense to you. K2RIW in the tech name. You got it, Eric.
WB2HWW with a comment here.
And a comment for Joe after.
Okay, and STW is also waiting, so we got three people in that in the list of dormant comments. Eric, first, go ahead.
All right, Dick. Actually, this is a replacement for the front end of this radio. The radio actually got hit by lightning in the front end, and it got all, you know, let's call it carbon crusted, so I decided to redesign it a little bit. I suspect the front end had a little more gain, but I think you just gave me a good clue. I need the Agilent hemp transistors and... So very nice. I built a number of preamps that I've been using for other things at higher frequencies. What I think I got to do is I got to get my spectrum analyzer that goes up to 20 gigs, 40 gigs back from the city and take a look. You may be right about that. I may be actually making myself a 5 or 10 gigahertz signal generator, and I'm not being aware of it. But that makes good sense. The thing actually has a helical filter before the front end, which has the right bandpass to try and minimize the amount of spurious stuff that I get into it, because I'm only interested in it as it is about megahertz worth frequency. And it's really a very, very quiet transistor. I was surprised the thing would even operate that low. Although the spec is, it specs at around 400 megahertz at the bottom. I think it's 136 isn't really be a problem. But I think you gave me enough clues as to where to go look at it. So, because I went through the pain of, you know, designing the circuit, biasing it properly, making sure the output impedance is 50 ohms into the next stage. There's one small low gain stage before, it's really isolated before the first mixer. And as you said, if that thing's singing along at a frequency that I can't see, that's going to ruin everything. K2RIWK.
Okay. The best example I can think of this exact problem is way back in the dark ages of 1964, my wife's car radio failed, AM radio. This is to a half meg, to 1.5 meg. The oscillating transistor died, and so I picked up a RCA 2N384 transistor. Beautiful transistor, great noise figure, lots of gain, capable of beautiful performance, up to 100 megacycles. The previous transistor in there as the oscillator barely operated up to 3 megacycles. So I plug in this 100 megacycle transistor in a 1 megacycle circuit. And so, without a doubt, the circuit had its proper oscillating LC network and whatever that resonated at 100 meg. but it had a quarter inch of wire here and a half inch of wire there and a printed circuit board. So to a 100 megacycle transistor, it looks at those nanohenries of all those other little bends in the circuit and says, hey, yeah, there's a nice resonance there at 100 megs, but it found another resonance at 110, another resonance at 47 megs, and it oscillated wherever it wanted to because it had the capability. So you take a super transistor and you put it into a mediocre circuit, and boy, it's going to find all kinds of ways of taking off. It sees things that you didn't see at first until you use your microwave set of eyeglasses there. And there's a 50-50 chance you ran into that problem, Eric. When did you find out what's going on with your 136 meg weather receiver? Please come back and tell us. It's an interesting sounding story. W2STW was the person we signed with a comment a little while ago. We're going to get to you and then Howie next. STW, go right ahead. Start off with your name, sir, and then your comment. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
K2RIW, this is W2STW, Jerry at the mic here. First of all, thank you very much for all the valuable information. I was reading the mail for a while now, and I am very impressed. My question to you, Dick, is this. I need a box relay for Kenwood 520F. They don't make them. There's no substitute for them. Any suggestion where I can pick one up? Probably a used one. That's number one. And number two, you have a shop, a repair shop, where you do commercial repair on these radios. Back over to you, Dick. K2RIW, W2SCW, Jerry at the mic.
Very fine, Jerry. Thank you. A box relay for your Kenwood 20S? No, I can't help you on that one. I built my own box circuit, but I'll admit it was an enthusiastic effort. I did it for academic reasons, way back in the dark ages of 1965 or so. Let's see if Mel's got a suggestion on that. And Mel, drag your feet a little bit in case anybody else also knows of a box circuit that Jerry can easily add to his rig. H-U-K-E-Y, this is a tough one. K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Oh, it's easy. This is K-2-K-E-Y. Look in the Radio Amateur's Handbook. They got it there. Very simple box circuit, a couple transistors. The relay is easily obtainable from, I believe, Mose Electronics or Radio Works. I think it's Mose, yeah, I think Mose, yeah, they have it in their catalog, right, that relay. And we put together very cheap, very simple. In the Radio Amateur's Handbook, I have last year's edition, but I would bet it's in this year's too. If you want, I can give you the page over.
Now, I imagine this Kenwood 20S is a little, very compact rig. From your recollection, Mel, what's the approximate physical size? And is this a little box with its own little battery that hangs between the microphone and the rig? Is that the way this box circuit works? Back to you, Mel.
Yeah, you can put it together. I think it's a board. Let me see if I think I was looking at it back, I don't know, a few months ago. Just looking for the, just looking at the circuit, but for another use other than actually on a radio. Let's see, where the heck is 29, chapter 27, page 19. It's pretty small. Let me see, I think it's an inch and a half by an inch and a half board with the relay. The relay is a one of those encapsulated relays, Dick, so it's made to mount on a printed circuit board also.
Okay, so that's the solution if Jerry is enthusiastic to build his own. I know what Jerry would love to do is write a check, make the problem go away, and buy a commercial product. On a quick break, Mel, do you know anybody who sells a box circuit that Jerry could add if he doesn't want to go through the enthusiasm of building his own? Back to you, Mel.
Get older, how, K6DPZ?
Pal has, I don't know if Pal makes them or just has to have them around. That was, yeah, years ago, I can say, Dick, in the dark ages, when single sideband, all these things were coming along, there was a lot of homebrewing, and then these companies came out with a number of these aftermarket little boxes that you could add, you know, box circuits and, PR switches and all that kind of goodies. So it's a possibility that there's still some of them around over.
Okay, I think Howie was saying K6DPZ. In other words, if I Google K6DPZ, I'll find a man, a company that sells things, and I think you're saying he has a product called Buck Circuit. Back to you, Howie, for comments on that.
No, I'm just saying he can fix it. He has all the parts. Howie is a member of Limark. He does service work. I wanted to make a comment on the preamp stick.
Okay. We're going to get back to the preamps in a second. Jerry's second question, do I run a repair shop? The answer is no. I run a consulting business, Jerry, and you wouldn't want to pay my prices. I wouldn't want to pay my prices. however, you do have a number of people in this club who are very good at doing repair. The first one that comes to mind is Andy, WA2CDL, Charlie Delta Lima. And so when it comes to club members, for sure, he's the guy everybody goes to when it comes to alignment, measurement of the PL tone and frequency and sensitivities and power outputs and so on. So he does run a repair shop for club members for sure, and maybe you also. And there's probably more members that do that. Back to you, Jerry. I hope we answered sort of your question. W2SCW, KQRIW in the TechNet.
All right, Dick, thank you, and thank you everybody else for your kind help. I do appreciate that. We'll be in the listening mode for a while, 73, and a very pleasant good evening, one and all. Thanks again. K2RIW with the net. This is W2FCW clear.
And Jerry, you hit a question that some other people that are listening, I'm sure, want the answer to. When you find out the best way to add Vox to your Kenwood 20S, please come back and tell us what solution you found, whether you homebrewed or went to Hal and bought a commercial product or whatever. Come back and let us know. Sounds like a fun thing to know about. Howie, I know you had another comment on the earlier material about preamps, and I bet you've added a lot of preamps on repeaters and had them sometimes work and sometimes give you a grief. So tell us a little bit about that. You got it, Howie.
Oh, yeah, they can give you grief. They can blow up on you. Two things. One, if you're running a preamp, and of course you're going to get intimized, you want to run a cavity in front of the preamp. That means if you're going to put gain in, you don't want the preamp sitting out to the outside wall. Period. Number one, if you don't have any kind of filtering in front of it, you may blow the preamp. Number two, you know, if you have a sharp window, then signal on either side of it won't push it into compression or put you into intimod. Second, I just like to make a comment. When hooking up a preamp, it's a good idea to wire the preamp and get your voltage from the same voltage from the radio that's powering the front end. That means a lot of people will hook up the preamp and take it off the 12-volt line. I tend to take the voltage, even though the preamp might have a regulator in it and some filtering. I like to take the voltage from the same place that the radio is getting its voltage. I'll go inside the radio and bring out, you know, with a ferrite bead, the voltage that, you know, the regulated voltage that's going to the front end of the mixer. Go ahead, Dick.
Boy, you just said a mouthful. Eric, I hope you're still there. I got a question for you. When you took that high electron mobility transistor, that probably has beautiful characteristics up to 10 or 20 gigahertz, and the data sheet says you can use it down to 400 megs, and you used it down at 136 megacycles, and you plugged it into that circuit at 136 megs, and you tried to measure its sensitivity. Were you measuring that sensitivity at a location that is anywhere near an extremely high-power broadcast transmitter? I think you see where I'm going in that one. Hope you're still there, Eric. KE2EJ, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Oh, I think you're getting to know me. Yeah, it's in the shadow of a 60 kilowatt transmitter, but I don't think that's the issue, because it's we're talking about signal generators, and an enclosed cabinet that's pretty good. I've worked on a lot of radios on my bench, Jay, and believe it or not, TV transmitter doesn't really seem to bother it. So, I get really good sensitivity out of it. I mean, I can get down to like 0.2 of a microvolt for, you know, a full 20 dB of quieting, you know, want to measure the sine ad, I can look at it on my generator that way. I don't particularly care. Now, actually, my interest was is I wanted to, I have a number of satellite stations that I can watch, you know, the NOAA satellites with. And at home, I also have my tracking system, so I don't use, like, a turnstile. I actually got my, I use my bone bounce stuff to follow the bird as it goes by, and it works really nicely. But this was just another receiver I picked up. Actually, it's a Vanguard, and there's no schematic, there's no print that you can find anywhere. So I had no idea what the original transistor was. Most of it, the front end got toasted, so I just kind of, like, cut a hole in the board where all the carbon was and made it disappear. But, you know, I've been interested in that stuff for many years, and I had actually been doing some DSP software that I've been writing. I've been having fun making single sideband decoders, single sideband generators, you know, basically two sine wave sources in software, one being 90 degrees out of phase with the other, and using a Hilbert transform to make the whole thing work. And it's interesting. But the real reason for the satellite stuff was is that the geostationary and a couple of the LEOs produce something which they call HPRT, the high resolution pictures. It's really kind of a rather complex data stream, and it's you could take it apart using simple hardware, and it's an awful lot of hardware to do it that way, with shift registers and stuff like that. But, we live in the day of software. I'm not into using Altera chips because it gets to be too much of a pain in the neck for me. So I figured the PSP would be the way to go. And, I got my software working. It's nice looking at the high-res working pictures coming down. Back to you, Dick.
Dick, can you think of Vanguard Labs front end?
Go ahead, Derek.
I missed what you said, Howie.
Jamaica.
He's asking, are you using a Vanguard Lab front end? That's what he asked, Eric. Go ahead.
No, it's the Vanguard Lab complete receiver, the one that's synthesized, and you can actually program the ROM to pick up whatever frequency you want.
Sounds like Howie knows something about that one. Go ahead, Howie.
Yeah, they used an RCA 2K monster. Was it a 40736? Is that the one that used an RCA 2-gate MOSFET? Go ahead, Dick.
Eric, that's you.
No, this is the last receiver the guy made before he got sick and closed the plate down. This is all service mount stuff. It's just, you know, I wish it was a 3N128. I love those things, but they're not that quiet.
All right. Okay, I thought it was the earlier one. I just want to make a comment, Dick. When most people hook up preamps, they tend to run the preamp off the 12-volt bus. I like to run them off the 10-volt line or the regulated line in the receiver, and then I like to put a cavity in front of it, Dick.
Yeah, I can see why. For those who heard me ask Eric, is he near a high-power transmitter? What's going on with that particular question? Eric just happens to be the chief engineer of Channel 13, New York City, PBS, Channel 21, PBS out here on Long Island, and the Channel 21 is a UHF television transmitter running something like 60 kilowatts of peak envelope power of video going in antenna with gain that gives it something like 3.5 or maybe 4 million watts of effective radiated power. So that high power video transmitter is a small number of feet away from the laboratory where Eric was testing and building that particular receiver circuit. So obviously, whether or not some receiver overload is taking place from an adjacent signal at 700 megacycles is or is it 500 megacycles, whatever channel 21 is, that's an important criteria. Yeah, Eric did say he's got pretty good shielding. He's done lots of testing like this before, and he knows how to get around the problem. But for the rest of us, if we were a small number of feet